Welcome to the BizTrends 2024 report. I'm Danette Breitenbach, Biz Community's marketing and media editor. Today I'm chatting with Dali Tembo. Dali is a highly regarded futurist, TEDx speaker, and co-author of the book The Future Is Now. He's also the CEO and co-founder of the Culture Foundry Company, a global consumer insights agency that delivers trend guidance to companies and clients in 25 countries across Africa and the world. From Europe to India, who all consult him on something we South Africans have and that everybody wants to tap into, and that is culture. Welcome, Dali. It's so lovely to have you back on the BizTrends report.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Great. Let's kick off. Today, we're going to share your insights, or you're going to share your insights with us on culture as a commodity and how culture is shaping brands and how it could be our biggest export. So first of all, tell me, culture, how do you define culture in the century that we're living in the times we're living in?
Okay, amazing. So I think that is a really fundamental question to start off with, and I'm really glad that you asked that. I think the definition of culture really changes and depends where you're asking the question. But I think as far as us as an agency and what we believe, I think culture is essentially a set of beliefs, behavior, and values that are shared by specific communities around the world that we can tap into to try and understand exactly what's happening through anthropological methods, through trend forecasting, and also through a lot of the consumer research that we do in all the different markets where we work. So for us, it's really about those understanding those shared beliefs, values, and behaviors that certain communities around the world has.
That's so interesting, and I find it fascinating that a community has shared values. That I understand, what I want to say that I find fascinating is that these are then exported to other communities. How does that work? Where does the connection, because there must be an emotional connection. Where do they find that emotional connection?
So I think a really human-centered approach to answering that question might be to take a step back and kind of introduce how I even got into this world, right? I mean, researching culture, trying to understand culture, you know, where does something like that even start? And for me, I'm bicultural, right? I come from two separate countries in Africa, Malawi and South Africa. And so I was always trying to find myself kind of a sense of belonging in some way, given that I was a little bit of half of this and I had a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And as I grew up, that kind of triggered something inside of me and an internal curiosity to try and understand what it is that makes all of us different and want to belong. And I think what's essentially happened is as I got older and as our team and our company started to establish itself, all of us have this combined curiosity to try to understand what is the zeitgeist, right? What is at the center? What is the central theme about Africanness, especially young Africans? Trying to understand what it is that drives our behavior, the way that we feel, some of the things that we're looking at. And so ultimately, I think to answer your question, there's three really big things that have happened recently that have played a fundamental role in helping to drive our culture where it is today. And the first one, which, you know, we just can't run away from, has been the internet. I think ultimately we live in a globalized society where something happens in New York today, and obviously we have access to that immediately. But secondly, something really interesting happened where it wasn't just about the seeing trends as they were happening overseas. It was also now, suddenly, in the last 5 years, more and more about us being able to see how the international community sees us. And what that means is when we've produced our own content, when we've produced our own products and services, when we've shared our own stories, we've been able to see that we are either on par or certainly in some areas even better than what some of the rest of the world is producing. And we've had that lens for the first time in as distinct a way as we see it. So, you know, you can only go back to someone like Tyler, for example, who's, you know, on the top 100, and as far as this week, top 10 billboards, in the States and all over the world in terms of Spotify downloads. It's amazing that we can have a 20-year-old South African woman dominating in that space. The same thing happens in West and East Africa with people like Burna Boy and some of the other amazing business people, entrepreneurs, creatives that are producing amazing content. So I think for the first time, what we're really seeing, to answer your question, is the opportunity to have a huge influence on the rest of the world and being able to control what that narrative is that goes to the rest of the world.
You raise a very interesting point, and it's something that a few months ago I interviewed somebody, and they spoke about, they were a filmmaker, and they speak about how to shift the narrative of how we see ourselves, how Africans see themselves. And that's really what you're talking about. I would like to know, what was the almost causes belli that led to the shift? Is it just young people? Is it the technology that we've realized? What led us to suddenly shift the narrative, or that we are seeing the narrative shift?
So I think ultimately Africa has always been a huge source of inspiration for the rest of the world. You only need to go back to our original Grammy nominations back in the 60s and 70s. If you're talking music, if you're, you know, talking about inspiration in terms of political movements, people like Nelson Mandela, etc. We have a plethora of people who've played big roles in the past on the global stage. So that hasn't changed. What's really changed has been the rest of the world's access to what we produce and what we're able to create and the engagement levels. You know, I remember about, 10 years ago when I used to go into boardrooms around the world, people would almost look like, oh, okay, that is the African amongst us, right? Whereas today there's actually a sense of gravitas that comes with that. One of the projects that we are very, very proud to have worked on had to do with someone like Microsoft, for example, or Google, who have traveled all over the world and have so much access to different agencies. And yet they're coming to South Africa for an agency to help them understand consumers. And where does that come from, right? I always use this example. Once you've gone and done research in places like Nigeria, for example, with hundreds of tribes and different types of languages, and the electricity goes off 4 or 5 times a day. Going to Japan and doing that research is a ball, is an absolute, easy exercise. So ultimately, all of these things that we look at as challenges have actually armed us to be able to work on the global stage in a way which I think makes us quite competitive.
And then picking up from that, how is this culture being picked up by brands? And I suppose in particular, international brands.
Yeah, and I love that. It's a really good lead-in to, one of the pivotal themes about this conversation, which is ultimately about, the corporatization of culture. And that's happened based on the fact that a lot of brands have been looking for relevance. If there's one question that we've gotten more of than any other in our briefs in the last 2 years, it's, how do we make sure that we're still relevant, right? A lot of our clients are asking, who's next? What's next? What is the ultimate in terms of the culture zeitgeist for people? And even more importantly, things like, what subcultures are super important. Danette, I think you'll excuse me if I use the reference of us coming from an age where, rebels were celebrated, people who went against the grain, that type of thing. So you see today that that's changed dramatically. So I think ultimately what we're really seeing is brands have played a pivotal role in entering into a lot of cultural spaces, particularly when it came to street culture. One of the mottos that we live by as an agency is, brands that are born in the boardroom tend to die at street level. And why is that? It's because ultimately the more time that you spend in these spaces, the more you realize that what is produced that is creative and that is remarkable and that is different usually has less structure and doesn't come from the haves, it comes from the have-nots. It comes from people in our communities who, do not have the luxury of time and resources for whatever reason. So in recent years, I think what we've really witnessed is an increasing commodification of culture, where brands have recognized that the power of cultural symbols and traditions really resonate with consumers, and a lot of them have sought to incorporate them into their marketing strategies. And one of the things we know is that, you know, this hasn't started just now. In the 1990s, we had a barrage of brands, international brands, that were kind of getting into the cultural space. But back then, there were a lot of, you know, barriers to entry for these brands. If you think about it, the price of data, even in the early 2000s, or access to the knowledge that would, you know, get you into hip hop culture or some of the many other types of cultures, you needed to kind of know someone who would act as a conduit into that world. The internet has ultimately become that. These days, you have access to these subcultures in a matter of seconds. And so our role has shifted a little bit. And I think this is really important for brands to understand. You know, once you speak to brand managers and they say, I feel like music is a really important thing to get into, we need to ask the hard questions about your brand values and to see whether something like music even fits into what suits and fits brands, you know? So this practice has raised a lot of concerns about things like cultural appropriation, like the potential exploitation of underserved communities. Our role has turned from identifying what's happened on the street to also playing a protective role. You know, how do you contribute to a movement? Is it by, you know, just giving a bunch of money and saying and slapping your brand over it? Or is it about genuine and authentic collaboration? Is it about long-term commitment to assisting people to get more exposure? These are the type of questions and a lot of the engagement that we're having with brands that I think is critical and something we need to look more and more into as we go into 2024.
You know, you touched on that, and it was sort of like my next question was, how do we stop the abuse? I think consumers are actually quite clever. I don't think they're always given, we're all consumers, but we're not always given that we're treated a little bit like we're stupid, but we're clever, and we can quickly see when something is authentic, which happens to be the year, the word of the year even, authentic, and when it's not. But how do you stop brands from kind of overstepping or, just that negative part? How are you able to stop them from doing that?
So I think we need to construct a specific prism through which brands look at how they connect with communities. For far too long, I think there have been predominant and global trends that we almost enforce on our consumers without truly understanding. We talked about culture at the beginning. Our own values, our own belief systems, and how we behave specifically. There's been so many examples in the work that we've done in the last 5 or 6 years where you need to stop and actually take into account, what do the people that we're communicating and engaging with actually want and what's in their best interest? I'll give you a typical example. We've done some work in West Africa recently, and you know, one of the brands that we work with said to us, gosh, we're trying to understand luxury, like, you know, tell us about luxury behavior and all types of things, without realizing that the youth that they were speaking to in that West African country were dealing with 3 internal wars at the same time. And so luxury wasn't one of the things that's high on their priority list. But I think there are some simple tools, some simple ways of thinking that I think help brands to start that conversation with consumers to make sure that we are not, advocating for something that isn't particularly good for the consumers. So the first thing is, I think we need to look for deeper connections with audiences, right? You know, by connecting with cultural nuances, brands can forge meaningful relationships with consumers. What we want to do is actually foster loyalty and trust. And the only way we can do that is by being honest about what we want. And that's a great thing about where we are today. Consumers are really, really, really on it. People know that you're selling a product, selling a brand, selling a service. What do I get in return? And so focusing on value and our value propositions is of critical importance. Secondly, it's about embracing brand storytelling and allowing consumers to tell their own stories, right? How do you incorporate the cultural elements about people's stories and allow them to create narratives that resonate with audiences all over the world, you know, making brands more memorable. And things like this can end up helping the brand to be super relatable. A lot of our work has to do with sticky stories. You know, how do we discover those things that are specifically unique about our customers? And they exist already. We're just giving them a reason to talk even more about it. And then lastly, things like emerging trends are really, really important. You know, are you always just taking a snapshot of your consumer in Africa and then waiting 2-3 years to do something specific about what you found out? Or are you regularly tapping into what people are doing, the dynamic changes, constantly evolving and generating new trends? I think by immersing ourselves in these cultural landscapes, something we like to call cultural intelligence, brands definitely can gain valuable insights and tap into future trends and preferences.
So that brings us to my next question, which is, I suppose, very much along the lines of what we're talking about today, which is trends for 2024. What are some of the emerging trends that you are seeing?
So I love the fact that you started the conversation a little bit earlier by saying, you know, one of the things that everyone is talking about is this sense of authenticity, right? And I think, you know, even when we started, when I started working, you know, in 2007, 2006, we were obsessed with those global trends, right? We were looking all over the world to see what might be here in 6 months and 8 months and that type of thing. What we're really expecting to see flourish this year is authenticity, but it's embedded in reverse innovation. And reverse innovation talks about, you know, places that are in the emerging market starting to establish themselves on the global stage, and even more in the developing world, right? Or what people, some people might call the developed world. And we are seeing it. We're seeing lots of examples in it within business, but we're also seeing it in culture. We're seeing it in arts. We're seeing it when it comes to the creatives that are making a splash internationally. One of the things we talked about and have been talking about for the last 5 years has just been the establishment of these innovation hubs in all our major centers on the continent, whether you're talking about Yabacon in Nigeria or you're going into East Africa. People starting to produce amazing innovations that are having real, very real impacts to the people within those communities. In South Africa, we've had so much exposure to, you know, things like local community heroes that are changing the way that, you know, townships works, providing free services that the government has struggled to provide. What we're really starting to see is a shedding of the inferiority complex that I think a lot of us used to have, and really starting to understand that we are able to help define where the future is going. And so some of the big kind of economic issues, some of the big political issues, social issues are still there. And they're definitely things that are difficult for us to kind of find answers for. But I think culture is a powerful tool for brands to connect with these audiences on a deeper level. And it's really that authenticity and connection that we're looking for is the big trend that we're hoping to see flourish in 2024.
So if we're looking at authenticity and connection, and yet we've become very much a world connected through technology. So are we finding a shift in how we communicate and connect on technology where it's becoming more human? Even though it's technology, I know it sounds like it shouldn't sit together, but are we seeing a trend where the two are sitting together? And especially in Africa, where we are also mobile first, and then how young people are using that?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question, Danette. And the reason is that we see as a research company how that evolves in a very direct way. So, you know, in 1 week, we can be talking to Gen Z in America at exactly the same time as we're talking to Gen Z in Nairobi or in Lagos. And one of the things that we see that's fundamentally different is, you know, a year and a half ago, we already had to change the way that we were talking to consumers in those countries, simply because those young Nigerians, Gen Zs, and Kenya as well, were way ahead in terms of digital than what we were seeing even in the developed world. I mean, we had to change even the survey platforms we were using simply because they were onto us and using AI, and, you know, they were doing stuff with cryptocurrencies and all kinds. And we're talking about 18, 19-year-olds, you know, in some of the markets that we're speaking about on the continent. And so, again, it's a really remarkable example of how we can lose that inferiority complex. These are people who are naturally ingrained with hustle culture, and see the relevance of, you know, yeah, making a way and a new path for themselves. And so we don't want to glamorize or romanticize, you know, what happens when people come from these backgrounds. But I think one thing we do need to acknowledge is there's a lot to tap into, and there's a lot of opportunities within that digital space.
And then if we take it back to brands, how do brands, what are the trends rather that we're seeing next year with brands in terms of culture and also the young people, the Gen Z?
So I think a really great place to start would be localization and regional specificity. You know, the discussions that we've been having with a lot of our clients highlight the trend of brands and culture becoming more localized and region specific. So, you know, gone are the days where if we're talking East Africa, you can have an East African strategy and you can imagine that people in Uganda and people in Kenya will be okay with us using the same billboards and the same technology and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I think we have really become sensitive to very specific nuances that we're expecting brands to take the extra effort to make sure that they're appealing specifically to us. So that's really about understanding regional nuances and the demands in terms of the context of that content. I think another thing that we can definitely catch onto is identity, right? The conversation delves into changes in the dynamics of how youth culture identity is changing. I think, you know, we made the joke a few years ago about, you know, a lot of young people do no longer see themselves as region first, right, in terms of identity. So you speak to a lot of Gen Z at the moment and they won't describe themselves as just South African first. They'll describe themselves as, you know, an artist or whatever else it is that is a big part of their identity. And so we really have to become quite nuanced in understanding what it is that is our kind of core levels of identity for people, and then kind of working outwards to what it is that people identify and feel very close to. Again, redefining identity, redefining values, redefining beliefs in the context of those emerging generations. A third thing that makes things quite complex is this world we're living in between our core roots and what we like to call our wings. You know, our wings are all these global aspirations that we have, global influences that we have, versus kind of discovering more and more about what makes us unique from an African cultural perspective. And there's so much. I mean, you travel to places like Algiers, for example, in North Africa, and you realize that a lot of the younger people are more conservative than their parents. You know, they've got, you know, parents who are more laissez-faire, who smoke cigarettes, are much more liberal, but maybe them as the younger generation feel a lot more, you know, they're closer to, you know, their religious beliefs, et cetera, et cetera. And so you can't make assumptions about young people on the continent. Places are very, very, very different. And I think the last thing that I'd like to really point out to is kind of just the cultural trend cycle. I touched on it a little bit earlier, but we really are seeing a dynamic shift from, you know, innovators and early adopters being in the West to them coming from our communities. And you do see that, again, the impact of that in the creative spaces, predominantly places like in music, in architecture. You know, some of the stuff that we're producing is really, really fundamental. And then maybe just for the you know, one last thing that we can almost add as a bonus to this conversation is the role of this kind of middle woman consultant. Particularly within the social media space, you know, I think it's really important for us to touch about how young people have been able to tap into cultural understanding and speak on behalf of others. It's really not that difficult these days to find, you know, agents of change And we don't like to call them influencers. For us, it's all about impactors, right? People who are natural advocates for the brands that we're talking about, and giving them a reason to talk about some of the things that they're seeing, some of the brands that they love, and some of the influence that they might have on people around them. So I think those are just a few things that are playing quite a fundamental role at the moment that we want to see more of in 2024.
Darling, that's absolutely fascinating. And I love the fact that you call them impactors. I think we've moved like from influencers to content creators, and perhaps impactors is the best description that I've heard so far. Thank you so much for your insights today. I feel like we could sit and talk all day. It's been so fascinating. And I hope that we'll catch up again, maybe in 6 months' time, and we can have another chat around culture and how it's changing and how it's changing our world. So thank you so much for your insights and your time today. We really appreciate you being on the Biz Trends 2024 report. Thank you.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Danette.